we want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2025. For the past 2 years, hundreds of mothers from around the country have gathered with us for a weekend of worship, teaching, and connection, and really to seek God together. And we can't wait to do it all again at this year's Motherhood Retreat, this time in Portland, Oregon, October 23rd through 25th. We know that motherhood is both beautiful and it's hard. It's both life-giving and exhausting, and it's full of both joy and sacrifice. It stretches us and forms us more than anything else. This retreat really is a spiritual formation retreat for us mothers. We aren't going to give you a bunch of tips and tricks for how to be a better mom, but we are going to press into how motherhood gently leads us to spiritual formation, how relationships are essential for the journey, and how our connection with God spills over to our connection with our families. This retreat is for women who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers and anyone in between. Mothers of babies and toddlers, young children, teenagers, and even adult children. This intergenerational gathering is a chance for all ages and stages of mothers to learn from one another, to encourage each other, and to simply be together. Because motherhood isn't meant to be done alone. The late Dallas Willard said spiritual formation can't be a private thing. It is a matter of whole life transformation. You need to seek out others in your community who are pursuing the renovation of the heart. And that is exactly what we are going to do together. So come join us October 23rd through 25th for the Intentional Motherhood Retreat in Portland, Oregon. We can't wait to see you.
You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Today on the show, we have Glenn Packiam. Glenn and I were recently in Nashville together, and we had a moment to sit down and to catch up, and I was encouraged, blessed, and really challenged in the best way. Glenn is a pastor, theologian, author, and a podcast host dedicated to helping people deepen their faith and navigate life with purpose. Glenn is currently the lead pastor of Rock Harbor Church in Costa Mesa, and he's the author of several books, including The Resilient Pastor, Blessed, Broken, Given, and the most recent title co-authored with his wife, Holly, The Intentional Year, which we're going to talk about today. Glenn's also a prolific songwriter. He's written over 65 worship songs, which you have absolutely sang recently or as you've grown up. So please sit back and enjoy my conversation today with Glenn Packiam. Welcome to the podcast, Glenn Packiam.
Thank you, Brooke. Good to be on with you, man.
I'm saying your last name correctly.
You are nailing it.
Okay.
You are nailing it.
Our last name is Moser, but
yes.
Spelled Mosser.
Correct, yes.
And even the hotel we're in this morning was like, is that Mosser? I was like, no, I mean, it's technically Moser, but I mean, at this point, just say whatever. So thank you for helping me with that. Welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you on for a handful of reasons. I recently learned that you shaped my childhood through soundtracks. You have a huge music background.
Yeah.
And obviously, people just heard on the intro, you're a pastor. You're a podcast host yourself. You're in this space, obviously, and you lead a church called Rock Harbor. And Todd Proctor, who's a friend,
You know Todd. All the mutual connections.
Lots of those wonderful people. But music was a huge part of your life.
Yeah.
And I'd love to maybe just start there. We'll get to your family.
Sure.
I know you have family.
Sure, yeah.
And I can't wait to talk about your book because we have some real overlap on that one, which I like. I like a lot. I really liked your heart and your mission and your vision behind it. Give me a little background on the music.
Yeah.
And then maybe a couple of the songs that have shaped actually people listening, soundtrack, and worship experience. You're a humble guy, I know, but it's good for us to know where these things come from.
Well, okay. So first of all, I grew up in Malaysia. That's where I'm from.
Okay.
my parents, like, they have their own kind of dramatic sort of coming to faith story. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But when they started following Jesus, it was like all in. And they used to subscribe to the, like, Tape of the Month Club from Hosanna or Integrity Hosanna
Tape
Music.
Of the month.
Tape of the Month.
Cassette.
Bro. Cassette. So I attribute my love of worship music to my parents. Like they would have these literal cassette tapes. It would come in and they would just blast it in our house on the weekends and they'd be praying, you know. And we do like family devos with these.
Yeah.
And so I grew up around it. And my granny lived with us at different points in my childhood. She would just sit down at the piano and just start playing these worship choruses, these praise choruses, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then we moved to Portland, Oregon, when I was 10 years old. And again, we're part of a church where the worship was a thriving kind of culture. So long story short, music and worship was my first love. Like when I sensed God saying, hey, I'm, you know, I want you to, give me your life to serve me. I kind of thought, yeah, I think it's going to be through music. Mm. So I never dreamed that I would get the opportunity to write songs that other churches would sing, you know, and actually to release albums with Integrity Music. Yeah, so that's like sort of this amazing, like full circle kind of moment.
Yes.
And that began, I was at a church in Colorado Springs for like 22 years.
Okay.
And the church had this relationship with Integrity Music and I was writing and a number of us were writing around the same time and some great songs came out of there.
Yes.
The one that maybe people might recognize, the one I co-wrote with Paul Balazs called Your Name.
Yes.
Which is also on a VeggieTales worship album. So it continues to shape the sound track of kids
so many
or haunt them either way.
Yeah, like, there's a song I remember. No, I when I found that I was like, oh my gosh, I know all the words to that whole song. Thank you, Glenn and Paul. Oh, that's amazing. What year was that when you guys wrote that song?
I think it was, you know, honestly, I think it was 2004 or 2005. So it's been like 20 years.
Yeah.
Oh, pretty wow. Wild.
That is weird to think that that was 20 years ago. That's it feels weird. Now, you're married. You have 4 kids.
Yes.
Maybe introduce us real quick to your family.
Sure. So my wife, Holly, and I have been married for 23 years.
Wow.
She is from a farm town in Iowa, which I sometimes joke. I'm like, you could just say she's from Iowa because it's weird. You know, that's, But, and so we met at college in Oklahoma and it's one of those unlikely Hallmark love stories, you know, farm girl, foreign student from a big city, you know.
Like, who's that guy?
Who's that guy?
He's so mysterious.
It was more the other way around, actually. Yeah. She was like, ew, who's that guy? And I was like, who's that girl?
I know. That's my experience too,
But thank God. And we have 4 kids. So our oldest daughter, Sophia, is 19. And then our other daughter, Nora, is 17, almost 18. Our son, Jonas, is 14. And then our daughter, Jane, is 12. So girl, girl, boy, girl, college student, high school senior, high school freshman, 7th grade. I mean,
it is
a blast.
It.
Yeah, no, it's so fun.
A blast.
So fun.
So 3 girls, 1 boy. I have the same combo.
Okay.
Yeah, one boy, 3 girls. I need any advice you have for being a girl dad, right?
Like it's the best.
I love
man.
I do love it, too.
It's
I love
great.
It. I love it too. I find that give me just one thing that you have chosen to do as they've gotten older, like they're in high school, right?
Yep.
To stay connected to them.
I mean, different ones, their personalities were different, you know, like so for some of them it's like the breakfast date or the lunch date or whatever was really special. For others, it's like, let's read a book together. But for each of them, I've tried to go on a trip with them. So I'll travel sometimes for a ministry thing.
Yes.
And almost always bring either one of our kids or my wife or someone from our team.
Yeah.
But like coming up next month, our high school senior Nora and I'm going to England for a pastor's conference.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, come on, honey. And I told the conference, I'm like, you don't need to do anything for me, but could you help my daughter come with me?
Yes.
And they're like, so that stuff, I think the chance to make memories with them is such a meaningful thing.
Yes. You know? Oh, I thank you for that. Yeah. Those moments. I think anytime if you have the luxury to be able to, or the resources to help travel, like the travel piece, I mean, it's isolated, like the time on the plane, the time just like the amount of just countless time that you have to just connect and build memories.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Now, you're also an author. Man, just lots of things you've been pouring into. A lot of creativity in your bones. Like truly, truly. Now you're now leading Rock Harbor. You've been there for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
But before that, you were on. You said this last night. We were hanging out last night for just a bit. Where were you headed to before that kind of happened? You were on your way to somewhere else.
Well, I was at a church, at New Life Church in Colorado Springs, and I was there for 22 years. And my role had changed over the years. I was started out as one of the worship pastors. Then I was doing spiritual formation stuff. Then I was the first offsite kind of congregation plant, if you will. And it was like quasi-autonomous, you know. So we had a lot of freedom to shape culture. It was called New Life Downtown. I led it for 10 years. It was our most, still is, our most like liturgically oriented congregation. So I was kind of on this journey, and actually along the way, Brooke, like I actually became an Anglican priest. I don't talk about that as much because I mostly live in non-denominational spaces.
Yes.
But I was grateful to have gone through that ordination journey because it taught me to actually resource from that tradition properly, you know, and have even greater appreciation and respect for it. But all to say, I was leading that, and there were some conversations about what could have been part of the future there, but then the Lord began to sort of make it clear, like, no, I think you finished your assignment here, and He began to get our attention, and we're so grateful to be at Rock Harbor, and what an amazing church, and the last 2 years have been incredible. Just we focused a ton on formation, we focused a ton on subterranean health and unity in the church, and now because of that, you know, I feel like we're turning the corner. I feel like we're picking up speed and we're seeing signs of life everywhere and growth that isn't artificial and growth that isn't exponential. And I'm grateful for that, actually. Growth that is steady and the result of kind of deeper root systems.
Yes.
So anyway, blah, blah.
Well, Southern California life compared to Colorado. Do you miss Colorado or are you liking Southern California?
Man, we have arrived at the promised land in Southern California.
Isn't it amazing when January happens and you're like, wait, I can still walk to breakfast?
I'm not shoveling. I'm not scraping ice off my car.
Bend, where we live, is more of the Colorado.
Yeah, because the snow blows in and out. It doesn't stay.
It doesn't stay, but when it comes, I mean, you got to deal with it. You can't do nothing.
Yeah.
You wrote a book with your wife.
Yes.
Could you just tell us the title of that real quick? I just love it.
It's called The Intentional Year.
Yes.
I probably should have pinged you first.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a whole new arm of intentional. We're going to be reaching out now. No, I mean, we don't have any copyright on that word. I just loved, I was talking to somebody like, I think you guys might have some alignment. I was like, think? Anyway, but no, you wrote a book with your wife. I have so many questions about it. Like, where did it come from? What's it like to write with your wife? Give me start wherever you want. There's lots of things. As most of you know by now, this entire podcast was made possible by the generosity of our legacy builders. Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday, ordinary people like you and like me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to legacy builders in a large dollar amount, but we desire to invite a whole new group of people to give at $10, $25, or even $30 a month. If you're like me, you most likely already pay $20 a month for Netflix, $10 a month for Apple Music, $5 a month for Spotify, and various offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional at $5 or even $10 a month? Our dream is to see ordinary people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families all over the world. So as you listen to the podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us as God is stirring in your heart? Will you partner with us, even if it's just for a few dollars a month? Thank you so much for considering joining. Enjoy the rest of today's episode. And if you're interested, go to our website, intentionalparents.org, and click on Give.
I was reluctant to do the project, not because I didn't want to co-write with her, but because I thought, who's going to be interested in this? Hmm. And the origin story of the book is, gosh, it's probably been like 12 or 13 years now that we have taken a once a year retreat together for two nights. And when we lived in Colorado, there were a lot of beautiful like retreat places even close by. And it got to the point where we now do this twice a year, but we started out once a year, late December or early January. And we started to add some structure to it. So it would be like one part retrospective, like let's look back and take a stock of what we've just come through. And then let's take an inventory of kind of our rhythms in our life. And we started to talk about rhythms of intentionality. And then let's take a step further and build it into our calendar. So it's not just ideas or goals, but it's actual events, a habit that has become an event in the calendar, a recurring event. And so we would share this with people, and then people would be like, dude, you got to tell, like, give us the template. Like, what do you do? We want to do the same retreat.
Yeah.
And we're like, I don't know, just, you know, do something similar. And I would write a little blog about it or a Facebook post. And people were like, you need to write more. And my wife was like, babe, I think we should try to write this out. So I really underappreciated how helpful it could have been, or miscalculated. Yeah. And we were grateful for a wonderful publisher in the Springs who really discipleship oriented, Nav Press, who said, no, this is the thing we want to get around. So we wrote it together, and by the time we started writing it, we'd actually got quite a bit of structure around our retreat, where night one was kind of like, take a breath, see each other again, you know, like the chaos of the kids. And then the first morning was, we would separate out and we would essentially do like the prayer of examine, which I'm sure your listeners are very familiar with that. But this is Holly's idea of to apply the prayer of examine over a 6 month or 12 month period.
Wow. And just, you know, that's interesting.
Yeah. And kind of say, where are the highs and lows here? Where were the moments to rejoice? Where were the moments to repent? Where were the moments to grieve and lament, even, you know? And then what are the themes that are emerging? You know, so some years the themes that would emerge would be, oh, wow, one of us really struggled with like a chronic pain issue or illness thing. Or, oh, wow, one of the themes emerging was, I was on my phone a lot more than I wanted to be last year, you know?
Yeah.
And then by the time we got to that first afternoon, we would pivot to, let's take an inventory of five areas of our life: rest, renewal, prayer, relationships, and work. And so that was the structure. So kind of like rule of life, but we would call these five spheres. What are we currently doing in them? How do we want to adjust them? And we'd especially go deep on the relationships one. Go, who do we want to lean in with? Who do we want to kind of, you know, maybe take a step back from? Which is awkward, but relationships ebb and flow.
Yeah, that's a good point.
By the second morning, it was the calendaring time. So then it was like weekly, monthly, quarterly, yearly. And we got to schedule first what matters most. And I needed this because I was like saying yes to things, and my wife would be like, wait a minute, we haven't even put like a vacation on the calendar or a retreat or whatever it might be.
Oh, absolutely.
And so we were fitting in the stuff that should have mattered most. We're fitting that in the extra spaces instead of starting with it. Ugh. So just getting a jump on it, being intentional with it was super helpful.
Now, give me some, obviously this became something that became a book, and what has kind of been the feedback from that?
Yeah.
In interaction with it. Have you had a lot of folks?
Yes.
Getting into it, give us some of the feedback. What do you hear?
It's been awesome. So it came out December of 22, the book did, and then in the summer of 23, the companion journal was released, and both have been really, really well received. And a lot of people have told us, like, oh yeah, we're doing this. We built this in our rhythm now. That dead week between Christmas and New Year's, or
is that when you primarily would you recommend it then?
I think it's really helpful.
Yeah.
I think
starting of
the year, and your mind naturally goes towards resetting your rhythms. And resolutions are fine, but habits are better.
I've never kept a resolution. I mean, I don't think I've really ever made one, because I know the reality that I don't really keep them.
Exactly.
Right? A resolution's that's fun. Let's just talk about it.
Yeah.
And whatever they are. Yeah. Promises.
Well, and the difference is, you know, so someone might say, I want to read 20 books this year. That's fine. But what would be better is if you say, I'm going to read 15 minutes a day.
Yes.
That's better. That's a rhythm. It's a rhythmic routine that actually formationally will have more impact long term than just hitting a number, hitting a goal. And one of the funny stories we joke about with this is after our second child, my wife trained for a half marathon.
Yes.
And, you know, she was running in Colorado at, you know, mile high elevation. But then the race was in San Francisco, so it felt easy.
Sure.
But after the race, she never ran long distance like that again. You know, she's I'm never running longer than a mile. You know? So we laugh about it, and you're like, that's what a resolution is like, is you hit your mark and then you're like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I don't want to build it in.
Right. Versus rhythms, they become part of who you are, part of what you do. Yeah.
How has this impacted your life and your family's life?
The funnest thing is to see our older girls willingly on their own doing this for themselves. Oh, I mean, So this summer, our college daughter was home for the summer, and then our high school, and they were like, "Hey, we're going out to a coffee shop." Blah blah blah. I'm like, "Oh, what are you doing?" Like, "We're working on our rhythms of intentionality," and we watch them leave the house with our book and journal. I'm like, "What? Like, you don't have to do this, guys. Like, there's nobody, you know." And they're like, no, it's cool. And then, next level, they're like getting their boyfriends to read.
Like, my dad's an author. So you should be impressed.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm really sorry.
That is so that's kind of cool. Fun. Glenn, yeah. That shows a ton that your kids would trust you enough. That's a respect thing, right?
It's humbling.
Huge.
Yeah.
Last time John Mark was on the show, just recently, we obviously, you know him. He was making his son read his book. But that's a different story. He was telling us about it, and I was like, "Yeah, it's a different thing."
Yeah.
And I think,
I'm not saying our younger two will do the same. They're their own people.
And Moses is 15, so I don't think he's really interested about people living in lies. He's like, "I think it's interesting, but like developmentally, he's just not there yet, right?" But I think, you know, to your girls, like, they're seeing like, "Whoa, you guys have put something in the world that actually is going to help me and make my world better." And obviously I'm not implying that John Mark's book, Live No Lies, is not helpful. I'm just saying, as a contrast of like, that's of your kids are actually giving you that feedback. They're saying, "Hey, this is helpful on any human level."
And they are inspiring us. Like Nora, our high school daughter, I went for a walk one morning with the dog, and on my way home, I saw her. I was like, "Oh, what are you doing?" And she goes, "Oh, it's what I do Wednesdays at, 6:30 before I get ready for school." I go, "No kidding." I'm like, "Tell me about it." And she goes, "Well, every day I have a different prayer focus. And on Wednesdays I pray for," and I just looked at her. I'm like, we didn't tell her to do this. Like, how did you decide this? And she has great mentors at her school and church, So this is not like patting ourselves at the back at all. If anything, it was convicting. Like, man, I need to do the structure.
That's so good. So she has a different prayer structure for each day.
Yeah.
That's cool. Did you make it on any of the lists?
Yes. Family's on one of them. Like, "Thank you, honey. Thanks for praying for us."
She's like, "I don't pray for family." This is kind of a hopeless situation. No, that's beautiful. And, interestingly enough, I found this recently. I'd be curious of your, because you have the range, you've had the range of kids, but you know, you have adulthood.
Yeah, I am.
One of our kids, she's really she said something that was both beautiful and heartbreaking the other day. Mm. And she said, I just don't feel like a good Christian. Mm. And I was like, tell me more about that. Mm. She's 12, she's going on 50.
Yeah.
Like, she's highly mature, old soul.
Yeah.
Very aware of how to communicate feelings and emotions. And we talk about it at home, but nonetheless. Mm. And she just said, "I just don't feel like I'm that good of a Christian." And I was like, "Wait, what do you mean? What is a good Christian to
That's
you?
A great question.
Like, what is that
great
even question. Defined,
yeah,
right?"
Yeah.
And she said, "Well, I just can't pray enough. It's kind of boring, and I can't read my Bible enough." And I was like, "Okay, like, let's define enough. What's enough?" The next
so
layer.
Good.
The next layer. And she's like, "Well, I see you and Mom reading for like hours in the morning." And I'm like, "Oh, sweetheart, like, no, that's not true. You just wake up and you see us reading, but you don't know if we've been there for 5 minutes or four hours." Like, but it was really interesting. The why I'm saying all this is because something that we've decided to do as a part of our just sanity. Mm. I mean, we can call it formation. You can call it special stuff. It's actually to get through the day and have one moment to breathe and be centered on Jesus and to hopefully start the day in the right direction. Because if not, it will be disastrous. So we wake up and we would have what a traditional quiet time would be. But sometimes that's a walk. Sometimes that's a verse.
Sure.
Whatever. Yep. It was interesting how this positive thing that I would imagine is like, this has got to be helpful in some sense. I hope it's helpful one day. Mm-hmm. She's actually giving the feedback like, "It feels like a bar that you're setting." She didn't say this, but "It feels like a bar that you're setting that I can't live up to." I was like, I would have not ingested it that way. So then we started, then it was like a great conversation.
That's
of
so
like,
good,
do you realize like, actually like reading your Bible a ton is not a mark. And like, it was stuff that we've never said to her. And we never have even implied like, "Guys, you have to be reading your Bibles. You have to be praying." But she in her brain and obviously in something we might be doing or not doing unintentionally or intentionally is communicating like, "Hey, pray and read. Like, you got to do a lot of that. And if you do enough of it, then you'll be good." And I was like, "Oh man, I'm so glad we're talking about this." Mm. I say all that to just simply say those habits, even good, don't always
That's
don't
right.
Don't always ingest.
That's right.
In a good way.
That's right. You're absolutely right. And that's cool vulnerability of that story, because I would say, like our son would be more of he would have a tendency to interpret these things as a standard that he's got to somehow live up
yep,
to.
Yeah.
And we've had to use a different approach. So sometimes, quote unquote, being intentional can actually feel like pressure.
Yes.
And let's the same that. Amount of pressure you apply on one child is different than what is needed for another. A child might have a strong inner critic or a high shame meter. And you're no pressure is actually the writer, the better approach.
I like writers. We can make it work. That's fine. Yeah, I mean, you speak for a living and write and whatever.
We know
you're comfortable with words.
Yeah.
It's okay.
So it's so true. And that's the thing about parenting, but it's also true of discipleship. It's true of friendship. You just have to always stay awake and stay attentive to the Holy Spirit and to each person, you know, to say, you know. The other day, Brooke, I was praying over one of my kids, and I just felt the Lord challenge me with this and say, are you willing to let them learn some of these lessons after they leave your home?
Oh, no. And the answer is like, no, God.
Like,
absolutely
God,
not.
Like, it's not like I have a curriculum of things they're supposed to learn, but I do have a certain idea of like, before they leave, we want,
yeah,
you know?
Of course. Of course.
And whether it's character stuff or, you know,
or just like world readiness.
Yeah. And I was like, gosh, I'm not willing. And having to say, ultimately, Lord, they're yours.
Yes.
And I don't get to set the timetable for their spiritual development and formation.
Mm. Wow. Oh, there's so many things I want to say. I won't, but I mean, Ronald Rollheiser.
Yeah.
He has this phrase in a book. I think Elizabeth probably mentioned it the other day. We had this argument of who loves Rollheiser more. I was like, sweetheart, I've read all of his stuff because I love his stuff so much. And she's taking it as a claim of her own now. Whatever. That's fine. But he has this phrase, this little line in a book, and he basically had said to remember that God is the real parent.
Mm.
That at the end of the day, no matter what, God is more anxious for your kids than you are.
Yes.
He also has more control and authority over their life than you do.
Mm-hmm.
And cares about their outcomes more. And there was this level of like, I care so much.
Yes,
you care so much.
Yes.
And as a parent, a good-willed parent who actually, I mean, not, you and I, we know, we're very aware, we don't have all of our stuff together. We have so many areas to grow as parents, as dads. But at the same time, like, of course you want to try.
Yeah.
And you want your kids to go. But there's that line where you're like, I did all the right things.
Mm-hmm.
I did the intentional year. Like right. What the heck? It's
right.
It's not playing out. Yeah. And then with another kid, you're like, they're thriving with it, right?
Yes.
And all to say, I have so many feelings towards that, but what a good word and a good reminder. Mm. Can we trust God with our kids fully?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a source, especially for so many young moms, of anxiety.
Yes.
That I, like,
I've got to impart all these things now, otherwise, or else, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the things Holly has done such a great job of, she has a really wonderful mentor in her life, a woman named Sally Clarkson, is also a motherhood author and all this stuff. Sally's been so helpful in teaching us early on when our kids were young that the most important thing is to establish a connection with their hearts.
Yeah.
And that connection will last beyond their time in your home and hopefully allow that influence to flow even as that influence changes. It changes from a more parent child to peer to supporter or whatever. But the other piece of it is the value of good stories and good books.
Mm.
And it's kind of that tell it slant idea. I'm a big Eugene Peterson fan.
Of course. Well, because you're a smart man.
Well,
he's amazing.
Amazing. And had the privilege in 2010 to spend a few days in his home.
Were you with him? Was John Mark on that trip, or is it a different
one?
It
was just me and one other friend. And
no
it was, it
way.
Was me and my buddy. And
well,
we
this
spent
podcast
two nights,
is going to become about that now.
I mean, it was such a gift. But Eugene's book, Tell It Slant, which of course is that quote. I think it's an Emily Dickinson poem.
Yeah.
Tell the truth, but tell it slant. The light must dazzle gradually, lest every man go blind. So I'm butchering it, but it's why Jesus told stories. And I think sometimes, in our effort, in our earnest and sometimes anxiety-fueled attempt to prepare our kids for the big bad world and instill all these things X, Y, Z, we underestimate the power of stories for moral formation. And I'm not just talking about Narnia. I'm talking about great stories can actually help them, it can fire their imagination. And their imagination about what courage looks like, what honesty looks like, what these sort of Christ-oriented virtues. And that's been such a powerful approach in our parenting. So it's not just been didactic or even discipline-oriented, but actually imaginative, playful.
Give me an example.
I mean, the girls, you know, would read Harry Potter. And we love it, actually. Yeah, yeah. And I know that's a controversial
thing.
My
little girl's reading it right now.
But there are moments where we'd say, okay, what's this like? Or what? And it wouldn't turn into like Bible study or whatever. Yeah. But it would just be an occasion to say, what does friendship look like? What is it that you see about what Ron did to Harry? In this, you know, that,
totally.
So it's a great way to talk about friendship. Or you know, a lot of our kids are into musicals, so we love going to go see Hamilton or Lion King or whatever. And sometimes it just provokes conversation. Yes. Like, okay, so what do you think about this or that? Ambition. What's the difference between these two characters and their pursuit of ambition or significance, and what does that do to us? And you know, and of course the conversation elevates as they get older.
Yeah.
But it's a way to get into these conversations without it feeling like, sometimes I think the discipline-oriented thing can feel like I'm failing or I'm succeeding, or the didactic approach can feel so specific about my life and they're under the microscope. But a story is sneaky because now we're talking about these characters and what they're doing right or wrong. And it may or may not apply, you know. So I'm reading a book right now with our 12-year-old, and I'll read a line or two sometimes, and we'll look at each other. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, isn't that what? And that's all I need to say is she'll just smile and she'll go, man, that's what I'm going through. Like, huh. And then we just go on and read.
Wow.
So I love that.
Wow. That's a very helpful, medium. I'm just thinking of the intentional year, right? Like, obviously you guys live with a certain level, not only just intentionality, but thoughtfulness, right? You're thinking about this stuff because it's super necessary. Mm-hmm. As your kids have gotten older and as they're growing, how has that thoughtfulness had to change? And I guess what I mean by that is, like, obviously when you're raising little ones, you have one thought process of intentionality. Here's the things I'm trying to instill. And then, like, the other day, will you trust that these things, but what are some of the things, like, that you're hoping to, as your kids are getting older, that you're like, give me a couple of those things that you and your wife are praying into for them. Like, what are some of those goals? I just want to give people that are listening, what is the actual framework of maybe like an ideal might be a strong word, but I think it's a good word. Like, what are the things you're praying for your kids? Because I think that could give people some framework of prayer.
It is. I mean, I think the two most important things are that we could help them have a genuine life with God.
Yes.
And then have healthy friendships with wonderful people who are the right companions, you know.
Okay, okay. You're talking about relationships, marriage.
I'm not talking about friendships. Friendships, honestly, all the above. I'm talking about all of the above, but certainly friendships. And more preparing ourselves and maybe preparing them for the reality that there are other people who are going to play a bigger role in their formation, maybe even from ages like 16 to 20 onwards than we would like to admit. When our oldest turned 16, I think that was one of the surprises for me. I was like, oh, friends are starting to become more. And so we wanted our home to be a place where people would gather.
Yes, yes.
Both my wife and I would do like, hey, would your friends ever want to do like a book club with us? So that worked with our oldest.
Yeah.
Couldn't see that working with our son right now.
Sure.
But there were things like that. But the way we're thinking is our own personal heart connection with them. So don't shut down any conversation. So when they open up, when they say something, I have to fight the impulse to like, ooh, I need to offer some wisdom or correction. So don't shut it down. They're opening up to you. Yeah. And then secondly, anything that could whet their appetite, provoke their hunger to want to be with Jesus. And it's different for each child, like what works for that. And then thirdly, gently help in the curating of their friendships and the people that they're spending more and more time with. Because that's learning to choose the right people that you surround yourself with,
that's
a lifelong skill they're going to have to have.
And teaching them at a young age, relationships for adults are very complicated. Friendships as adults. I think we, Elizabeth and I keep on being surprised. There's a lot of issues that you develop in high school that we see folks in their 40s still dealing with.
100%.
And it's a really interesting, you know, because you go, wait. I don't think we were supposed to continue in this, right? So what's happened? You know, so in your estimation, what's going on there? But like, we're trying to figure out like, where does that development stop, right? Like there's a moment where I think that stops, but then also like, what are some of the things, I think you're kind of talking about it already. I think you already answered the question, but like to be thoughtful so we can help our kids recognize like there's going to be a lot of people that know how to have relationships and a lot that don't.
Yes.
And not because they don't want to, they just have never been taught.
They've not been taught. And less and less, it's becoming less and less common for people to have these sort of skills.
Yes.
So we do talk to them about, okay, you might be operating on an assumption here.
Okay.
And here's what it could look like to check that assumption, you know, with a friend to say, hey, I just wanted to make sure.
Totally.
And it's different, right? But, yeah. I mean, with girls, there's the dynamic of, oh man, one of my friends felt excluded because three of us went to the concert and the other four didn't, you know.
Yeah.
So, okay. So how might you preempt that? Or how could you communicate?
So much coaching. Parenting is coaching. And I'm down for it. I just mean the level of coaching that no one told me that we were supposed to be doing. That is the level I'm like, coaching.
And coaching is a great word because you're no more directing or controlling. I mean, when they're young, you're arranging the playmates and all this stuff, your play dates, whatever. But when they're older, it is very much like, oh, I'm coaching you in this. And this is why their open heart connection to you is the key, because you want them to tell you about the drama.
Yeah.
And I have to be careful as a girl dad to not roll my eyes at it, you know, and to go, okay. So tell me, you know, and my wife is a thousand times better at it than I am.
Yes.
But then even with my son, you know, like I remember, you know, he's in high school now, but I remember in the middle school years, moving to California and entering seventh grade, that's a big jump. And guys at that age, you know, they mock each other so they feel better about themselves.
Yes.
And they're, you know, eventually mockery becomes a sign of affection, but initially it's rejection. And so just saying, okay, so what do you want to do in that situation? Or, you know, but I've had to realize actually that the approach to take is he won't tell me all the ways he's standing up for a buddy, but I'll pick up on it and go, wait a minute, did you just say that they said this in the group text or in the chat or whatever, and then you responded this way? And maybe his response is over the top, but I'm like, dude, you were sticking up for your bro. Like, that's awesome.
Yes.
Oh, thanks, Dad. And so just to even like call out the good impulses, like that's a good impulse. And this is an important thing. And, you know,
I was going to ask, as a girl dad, we share this and with one boy, obviously in the girl space, you have multiple different personalities represented. And so you have multiple opportunities, but you have one son.
Yes. Yes.
How are you navigating it? My son's 15.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, Jonas is 14.
So how are you navigating raising a son, and what are some of the challenges that you've noticed in raising a son versus raising a daughter?
I mean, hands down, it's the prevalence of video games. I mean, it's like, I mean, that's the first thing that comes to my mind. Yeah. Like the girls, it was never a thing.
They don't care.
I get my video game? Like, they don't care. We have carefully guarded, like no screen time on school days, you know, a couple hours a day on the weekend. So it's pretty conservative.
Yeah. That's us too, yeah.
And he's very aware how different that is from his buds, you know?
Yeah, oh, of course.
So I think there's some navigating of that, of like, man, I feel like the odd duck, you know, like, okay. I also think with him, face-to-face conversations are less likely to be productive.
Sure.
And shoulder-to-shoulder conversations are much better. Yeah. So we'll go, hey, let's go take our bikes out and go ride. Mm. And then all of a sudden in the car ride home, you know,
something comes up.
Or, hey man, you want to go see the Dodgers, or you want to go, you know, find cheap tickets to this or that, and then on the car ride, you know. So it is definitely an on the way kind of stuff, which is so Deuteronomy six, yeah, isn't it? Yeah, you know, as you're walking along the way, talk with them as you rise up, as you lie down. And I think that has been much more necessary with our son anyway, the way he's wired, than with our girls.
Is he wired more like your wife or more like you?
Oh, that's a good question. Gosh, probably a bit more like her.
Okay.
But then he's got that testosterone. He's quite an athlete and he plays sports and he's great. So
to the boy, the boy, the when boys are trying to become men, that is, and they're like,
yes,
this as like alpha language stuff. It's like, they're always, they're like, okay, who's the top one?
Yes.
And they have this like in kind of intensity as they get a little bit older. Yes. Like they're pushing against, they need that freedom.
And to be careful, I think I missed this earlier on in his like pre-adolescent, but, and to not, not rebuke him for developing aggression or the desire to fight. Like that's part. So I can't remember who it was, Brooke, but there's this whole like process of negation, like human, not animal, male, not female, man, not boy.
Yes.
And that kind of, and I might be butchering it, but I think that's how I remember it.
Yeah.
And there is this chant, there is this moment where it's like male, not female. And for him, in his simplistic kind of mind, it's like, my sisters like books and words.
Yes.
And I'm a guy and I like activity and action, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. It's also your personality and that's fine, you know? But not to be like, no, you have to love C.S. Lewis or, you know,
sure.
But to say, okay, all right, cool. Well, then you want to watch like a movie together and talk about stuff or do you want to, you know? So finding the pathways into his heart is, but again, I think for parents, this could be true regardless of boy or girl. Yes, it's just totally each child is different.
Well, I find with my son, he started driving permit, you know, so he has to have someone in the car. So I drive him to school every morning and I find we have really interesting conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's during that activity that stuff will come out. And if I don't put music on, he doesn't know this. He doesn't listen to the podcast. I'm sure he's not like, I wonder what my parents think about
it. I'm going to scope on you, Dad.
Yeah. I mean, he could. He's welcome to.
Yeah.
But, you know, he just starts opening up. He just will start saying stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
This is a really interesting thing that happens when you create space for that to happen. And I think it's back to that intentionality.
Can I say one thing on that?
Please.
I think one of the, I don't know which mentor helped us kind of recognize this, but when they're younger, you are bringing them into your world quite a bit.
This is the
trip we want to take you on. And this is the, you know, when they get older, even in their teenage years, you need to enter their world a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of where the coaching happens. That's part of the, you know, so even with the music thing, that's what made me think of it is, okay, tell me about this artist. So what's going on? So what do you love?
Just
the beat or the word, you know? And you
know, the words are not very great. I love the beat too,
I don't understand what they're saying.
Yeah, there's a lot of things I'm not sure about. Yeah.
But without being the cornball parent,
you know,
there is an effort to enter somebody else's world. And when you think about this is true of friendships. This is true of marriages. This is true of human relationships. Is that idea, I mean, Rich talks about it in Deeply Formed and Pete Scazzaro talks about it, incarnational listening.
Yeah.
The idea of entering, exiting your world like Jesus did and entering somebody else's world in order to really meet them where they are. And we forget that as parents because we kind of think, well, but I'm the parent.
Sure,
they,
I don't have
to. They got to enter my world.
That's what
you
I
know?
Grew up with. Yeah. I grew up the same. It's that idea like, no, you're the kid, I'm the parent, but which is hard to undo, by the way, when you're raised that way. It's like, it feels visceral when you're like, oh, I'm trying to create a new culture. I'm just not used to the new culture that I'm trying to create. And it feels foreign. I mean, if you haven't had it, it is weird because Elizabeth is more used to maybe some of the healthier functions. I wasn't used to some of those healthy rhythms. And so I'm like, I don't even know what this feels like. Uh-huh. This is very uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
With the intentional year, you know, obviously you guys are a very thoughtful, intentional family. I love that about you.
And likewise.
It's very clear though. I mean, you guys have obviously made a lot of strategic decisions early on and you've decided to pour into your family in a unique way. Mm. With the intentional year, as the book goes, what are, you know, if someone's listening and they're like, hey, I love that idea. Glenn, that sounds like a lot. You know, the normal excuses that everyone's kind of telling themselves right now. Where's a good place to start?
Yeah, I love that question, Brooke. And because it is, it can feel overwhelming. Like, oh my gosh, I got to change rhythms.
A two-day retreat in five
spheres. But, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the first place you could start is take a half a day. And I know if you have young kids in the home or if you have a busy job, even that is like, whoa, it feels revolutionary.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you have to find a way to interrupt your default settings. All of us are living on default settings. And the idea of intentionality is we're interrupting our default settings to make sure that we're living on purpose, living with purpose. And so it could be a half a day on a Saturday. And maybe you do that first thing. You do the examine, the reflection back. We call it a prayer of reflection back on the season that you've just come out of.
Yes.
And see how that goes. And maybe that'll be like so fruitful. You're like, now I want to do the like looking ahead thing and then use the inventory of five spheres. But even the five spheres can feel overwhelming. So I would say to someone, pick one of those. So there's, you know, prayer, rest, renewal, relationships, and work. Pick one of those. And I think, you know, there's a concept that a lot of people who study habits talk about, the keystone habit. You change this one thing and everything starts to recalibrate. Mm-hmm. I think if I were to say one keystone habit that will then begin to tilt the whole, you know, engineering of your life, it would be to have a Sabbath. And if you start to say there's going to be one day where I will not check emails or Slack or social media, one day where I do that, maybe I even go so far as turn my phone off.
Yes, you know, praise God.
That all of a sudden, because Sabbath is like a super, it's like a meta practice, because if you think about the five spheres, on Sabbath, you could pray a psalm. On Sabbath, you are resting. On Sabbath, you could do something renewing like a bike ride or a walk. On Sabbath, you could hang out with friends or family. That's relationships. On Sabbath, you could cease from work. So you're actually hitting all five spheres with one meta practice. And it's not a life hack. It's just the genius of God's design.
That's what I love about what you're saying. It's woven into who we are. First of all, this has been delightful. I have one more question for you. I appreciate, you know, you meet people, and you do all the time, lots of them. You know when you meet people and you're like, oh, they know Jesus and they have the spirit of Jesus in them. You really do. Oh, I see the spirit in you in a deep way, and I love your perspective. My last question for you, which I love to ask smart guys like yourself, what's one thing you're either learning right now? And does this have this no top? This does not have to be on topic, but one thing that's just interesting to you that you're learning. I mean, I know that you're probably praying, processing daily, different things, different ideas. What's one thing that you're learning right now that's given hope or encouragement to you?
You know, it's interesting because when you're in leadership roles or, you know, people even working in their jobs, it's so easy to talk to God about, hey, what are you doing in these spaces? And for me, it's like, God, what are you doing in our church? And what, you know, and I was, I've been thinking about how, you know, one of my prayers is, Lord, I want to help people who are on the fringes or on the surface of knowing you to go deeper and really know you. And so I was like, oh yeah, this is Philippians 3. I want to reread it before I can, you know, pray about this, where Paul says, you know, not that I've already attained, but I press on. I want to know you. Everything else is garbage compared to knowing right? But then I saw something I had never seen before. It's verse 15. He says, let those who are mature think this way. And I was like, wait a minute.
Whoa.
This isn't about the immature. This is about the mature. And it was so convicting and inspiring to say, I want to actually know Jesus in this season. And it sounds so simple, but I think of all of the like strategies, and there's leadership lessons, and there's all these insights. And I love that stuff. I love learning. I love reading Harvard Business Review articles. I like leading teams. I like seeing our church systems and all of that come alive. But in the midst of all of it, to not miss knowing Jesus. Yeah. And a friend of mine said this, he's in ministry. He said, I don't want to get to the end of my ministry career and find that Jesus and I have nothing else to talk about because I'm not in ministry anymore.
Oh, wow.
And I that has kind of stuck with me because that's true. Like, I want to be able to pray. I want to be able to read the scriptures, not even because I'm trying to make my kids better or whatever, but to say, Lord, keep drawing me deeper into knowing you. Keep drawing me deeper. And in the end, that ends up being the best gift we could give our families, our churches, our spouses, our friends, is a life that is plugged into the deep well of the life of God. So I feel personally I'm in a place of a renewed desire, renewed hunger.
Yes.
To say, Lord, I want to know you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for leaving us with that perspective, that hope, that reminder. I think as you get older, at least as I'm growing older, the very simple things are some of the most important and powerful and impactful things. And what you just said is utterly simple.
It's in so
the
basic.
Sense, it's so basic to the Christian experience. But most things that are so important and foundational, they come back, you know? Mm-hmm. But Glenn, thank you. Thank you for today. Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for your book. We'll have all your stuff in the show notes. So if you're curious about all the different books, the different, we didn't even get into all the podcasts you host and do.
It doesn't matter.
The pastor initiatives you have to help the Resilient Pastors, a podcast you can listen to. You're doing that with Rich Velotis. And who's the other?
Sharon Hottie Miller.
So you're doing that on a regular basis. And so people can find you there. Also, if you're in Southern California area, Rock Harbor.
Come on by, say hi.
Come on by, say hi, and get the content. But Glenn, couldn't be more happy. Thank you for chatting with us today.
So good.